coming to you from the top of the SmartWorks Tower. Nestled between the massage parlor and donut shop in beautiful downtown Red Bluff, it's the PenPals.Buzz podcast. Need a genuine connection? This is the place to learn how a pen pal can change your life. And, oh yeah, they just happen to be in prison. But Big Steve will never judge. He's open-minded, he's a little quirky, and he's ready for another adventure. So get your postage stamps, grab a pen and paper, and get comfy for 30 minutes of pen pal pleasure. Now, here's your host, Big Steve.
All right, yeah, we're here. It's a Monday. It's not just any Monday either. It's the first Monday in September. Woo-hoo, this is Labor Day. Every first Monday of every September, all the way back from 1894, people have been celebrating. I don't know back then if you probably couldn't go to Walmart in 1894 and grab that deviled egg potato salad that I love so much and have with your barbecue burgers, but I'm sure they had other ways to celebrate. And I think what people love so much about Labor Day is it's the one holiday you can just literally do absolutely nothing and it's okay. You don't need to make a turkey. You don't need to wrap presents. You don't need to hide eggs. You just sit home and you do absolutely nothing. And that's totally okay. And it's actually expected. It's expected to do nothing. And why we don't have that as a paid holiday here, I'm going to have to look into that. I'll get back to you on that. Okay, it's Big Steve. And this is the Prison Pen Pal podcast from penpals.buzz. We're talking today about wrongful convictions. Wrongful convictions, and you think about it, there's over 2.3 million men and women incarcerated in the United States. And a lot of them, you'll hear them say, maybe even read in some of their penpals.buzz profiles, I didn't do it, I'm innocent, I got screwed over by the jury, the judge screwed me over, I'm wrongfully convicted. Your knee-jerk reaction when you see that, I know a lot of people's at least, when you see that, you think, yeah, right. You know, sure, you didn't do it. I'm sure you wouldn't have been on trial if you were totally innocent. You know, I've heard all these things. And I know a lot of people that think these things. Sure, you didn't do it. And a lot of people probably did do it. A lot of people were correctly convicted. A lot of people are serving a valid sentence for something that they actually did. But a lot of people aren't. And I wanted to know just how many aren't. So I looked up a report by the National Registry of Exonerations, and this was reported in the Los Angeles Times, among other places. And I learned that the percent of wrongful convictions just in the United States is anywhere between 2 and 10%. I don't know. I mean, we can do the math. We can just do a quick average, and let's just say it's 6%. Because it was 2 on the low end and 10 on the high end, depending on how facts were interpreted and how the trials progressed and whatnot. So let's say 6%. Let's even say 5%, right? 5 or 6%. We're talking about 1 out of every 20 people. And I'd say that's a low estimate. 1 out of 20 people is wrongfully convicted in the United States or there for something they did not do, something they were not guilty of. And they're sitting there today in prison while we're outside barbecuing a steak and celebrating the fact we don't have to work. Now, let's go a little further with these numbers. 2.3 million people incarcerated in the USA. That means anywhere from, on the low end, 46,000 to the high end, 230,000. 230,000 people could be locked up and they shouldn't be. 230,000, that's a lot of people, right? I looked that up too. Baton Rouge, Louisiana has 230,000 people in their city. Boise, Idaho, 230,000 people. Salt Lake City, Utah, home of K-Bowl 93, one of my old alma maters there in Salt Lake City. About 230,000 people, the entire city, you imagine. You know, let's look at big, big football stadiums. You go to a football bowl game, you know, some are even more. Well, you might get 70, 80, 90,000 people right in the stands at a huge stadium, huge stadium. Now imagine 3 of those just packed full, sold out. 3 huge football stadiums packed full, sold out. That's how many people with a reasonable estimate are wrongly convicted. And I looked at how many people were actually proven innocent with DNA or other factors where they could actually say, not only are you not guilty, but you are in fact completely innocent. And of those people, they've served more than 23,950 years in prison, 20 all combined, of course, 23,950 years in prison. I was planning to do this show on wrongful convictions, and I get a letter right here from a guy named Clifford. I think he likes to be called Cliff Walker. He's in Wisconsin. He sent me a letter, a nice letter, along with a substantial amount of paperwork, transcripts from the trial, which I read through. I looked at the evidence, and I fully believe that he's not guilty of what he was accused of and convicted of. And even more interesting with Cliff Walker is that his dad is very well known because his father was locked up for 43 years since the 1970s. And finally, somebody looked at his case a little deeper and said, oh, wow, he actually didn't do this. We actually have credible evidence of his innocence. So Clifford Walker's father served 43 years of his life in prison while Cliff himself had no father that was around. And his father was released at an old age, and he was suffering from early onset dementia when he finally was released. So he couldn't really even enjoy or understand the victory. And he certainly couldn't spend the $2.1 million that he was ultimately awarded for being wrongfully convicted. So now, in a sad turn of events, like father, like son, we've got Cliff Walker living in his father's footsteps. He's been there now almost 20 years. He's got 15 more to go. We'll be talking with Cliff just in a few seconds here. I want to read just the last paragraph of the letter that he sent to me. He said, Steve, I hope after you review this that you're spurred enough to put my story out there to at least get a second look. This is the most hope I've had in years. My father had given up, and if it wasn't for my cousin Nate, they'd still be in jail. Well, my dad passed away over 6 months ago, and we never got to celebrate our family's victory. I've got two daughters out there, Melody and Shanice, and I don't know them. Because of these walls, I'd like that to change. Much respect, Clifford Walker. I had to get him on the show today to talk about not just his wrongful conviction. We also wanted to talk about what he knew of his father's experience and how that affected him as well. And so when people say, oh yeah, right, sure, he didn't do it. Well, in Cliff's father's case, he truly didn't. He was finally found to be completely innocent and given money for his 43 years, there's no amount of money that can make that worthwhile, that's for sure. But he got something to spend in his old age with dementia. And now Cliff is in the same boat. He's actually a member of penpals.buzz, and he's calling in to share his story and potentially find some people out there that would be willing to write him and support him through the second half of this horrific journey that he's been enduring, reliving his father's footsteps in the worst way possible. Cliff Walker from Wisconsin. Hi, Cliff.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Hey, man, we're doing all right. It's great to finally put a voice to the name. We've been emailing back and forth for some time now. You've been on penpals.buzz, and I've gotten to know a little bit about you, and we're hoping we can share with the world now who's listening, you know, more details about you and what you're looking for on the Pen Pal website, and then also some kind of information about your past and your case and what you're looking for.
Looking forward to this. You know what it feels like and what it's about. So that's one of the reasons why I feel so comfortable and so good about being on your page. I don't know what it was that put us together, because the other three pages was just I was on, and I'm still on, but they'll never get any more money from me. I'm just letting that money run out. Write a Prisoner, Con Pals, and Friends Beyond the Wall, they are not doing a damn thing.
Let's give your address out for anybody that wants to write you or wants to connect with you. They can get in touch with you either through snail mail or ultimately connect through Core Links.
They also can get in touch with me through you, penpals.buzz.
Yeah, that's right.
But if they want to write me, they can go to textbehind.com, TextBehind.com, and send me pictures and mail. We also have an email system here called CoreLink. And so what a person has to do is send me their email address, and I'll send them an e-vite from CoreLinks. And for some reason, CoreLinks makes it so hard to get on there or to navigate. And so if they wind up having a problem, they could go to fairshake.net/CoreLinks-sign-up. And it'll walk them through how to get through the process of getting on CoreLinks.
Let's say if they're going to text behind, and then what do they need to know? Do they need to know your name and your number and facility?
Yeah, they just really need to know my name, Clifford Walker, and my inmate number, 1988-34. And I'm at Stanley Correctional Institution in Stanley, Wisconsin.
Your mailing address there is kind of different because it's P.O. Box 189, but then it's Phoenix, Maryland, 21131, but that's because they forward the mail from Maryland to your facility.
And that address is actually Text Behind's address. So the mail is going to Text Behind. Text Behind copies it and then sends the mail to me on like typing paper. So that would be the long way to do it.
Right.
The quickest way to do it is just to go to textbehind.com and send it electronically.
Okay, and if you do it through penpals.buzz too, it takes a week or two, but we'll always forward your messages to Cliff as well through his system. So either way you want to choose, just find a way and get in touch with Cliff Walker and Stanley Correctional Institution in Wisconsin.
As long as she's legal and she has a good head on her shoulders, I'm leaving, you know, all the things that don't matter as far as weight or race. I don't have a specificity in mind with that stuff because it's superficial. In the long run, it don't really matter. I'm looking for something on the inside.
You know, we're doing a show today. It just happens to be about wrongful convictions, and I thought this is perfect to have you on the show. Because you've not only experienced that for yourself,
but all calls other than properly placed attorney calls may be monitored and recorded.
You've not only experienced that yourself, but your dad has also been through quite an ordeal, which became quite famous. I saw lots of stories about him finally being freed after 43 years, but your story is something fairly remarkable that I feel like needs to be shared with people so they can really understand how these things happen.
Yeah, I was without my dad, you know, basically my whole life. He did 43 years in prison, him and my cousin Nathan. Well, let me say my father's name. My father is Clifford Williams Jr.
Okay.
My cousin is Nathan Myers. And they both got convicted in 1976 of murder and attempted murder. And they both did 43 years in jail for a crime they didn't do. And plus, my father was on death row for a little while before the appeal system changed it to life in prison.
And it's really, it's unbelievable that, 1976 until 2019... Finally, it was the state of Florida, right, that finally came out with this conviction integrity review. He'd been trying for 43 years to get exonerated because he didn't do it, and it took them 40-some years to finally listen and pay attention, which is just so sad and wrong.
I've always loved my father, and my mother used to tell me a story about how when she took me to go see him when I was a kid, they check you just like they check an adult when you go visit your people in jail. And they found a big broken piece of mirror in my little pocket. I had to have been about 7 or 8. And when the guard asked me, why did I have that? My mother tells me that I told her, I said I was going to break my dad out of jail.
Oh, man, that's so emotional to hear that, even at that young of an age.
Yeah.
I wish it would have worked.
So I've always loved my father, really.
There's a book out now. I haven't actually read the book, but I read a lot of the reviews about it. It's by Bruce Horowitz, who's an award-winning journalist who got news of this story when your father was finally released. It's called Justice Pursued, The Exoneration of Nathan Myers and Clifford Williams, which is available on Amazon. I've got a copy on the way. I just didn't get it in time before we chatted, but I'm interested to read that. And now your story, it's almost like, in a way, you're reliving what happened to your dad, in a sense. I don't know if that feels that way to you.
Yeah, it does. And another crazy thing about my father's story is the fact that me and him never really talked about the reason why he was in there, and he never proclaimed his innocence to me. I kind of feel like he felt like it was going to fall on deaf ears because of the way he was fighting to get out of there, and nobody ever helped him in anything. So I didn't know he was innocent until the day I found out he was getting out of jail.
Oh, wow. Which was 5 years ago, about?
March 28th, 2019.
And they didn't just, it wasn't just that they let him out, but they actually found credible evidence that he was innocent. It wasn't just like, oh, we don't know for sure, so we'll let you out. But he was, like, legit innocent.
Yeah, actually, the DA that helped put him in jail was the one that helped get him out of jail.
I guess finally he did the right thing, but
43 years too late.
Terrible.
Whole families were changed because of what happened.
And now, can we talk about your case a little bit?
In my situation, July 25th of 2005, I was in a situation where I was going to buy some weed, and the guys that I was going to buy some weed from saw the amount of money I had and decided they wanted to try and take it from me. And so I fought back. And one of the guys wound up getting shot and died. And so I wound up getting convicted of reckless homicide and got 35 years in prison.
Yeah, and I read through a lot of the court paperwork that was sent over here. And when you actually read, if anybody took the time to read the evidence of what really happened in this case, I mean, it's very clear that your story is exactly what happened. They claimed you were there trying to rob them, but that just wasn't the case. I don't think you didn't even have a weapon with you when you arrived, did you?
No, it was their weapon. They pulled the weapon on me. What happened was I went to buy the weed, and instead of just giving me the weed while I was outside the car, once they saw how much money I had, they told me it was too much traffic in the street and to get in the car. And me not thinking nothing of it, I got in the car. And when I was preoccupied getting my money together, they started to take off. And once I realized that the car was moving, I told them to hold on, where are y'all going? I protested. And so they pulled over, and as soon as they pulled over, they pulled out a gun on me. And we wound up wrestling for the gun, and during the struggle, one of them got shot. And that's the one that died, and the other one took off. I guess my one big mistake was not immediately calling the police, but I try and explain to people my mind state at the time. I didn't have clean hands.
Yeah.
So, I ran because I was doing something illegal, and I was scared, and I didn't know if this guy had, died or anything. And so
you wrote to me in a letter, Cliff, a few weeks back that said, Who among us can't say for certain that we wouldn't have run too in similar circumstances? And I actually did some research, and it's not just you. It's a large percentage of people when they're in a traumatic experience. You get into that fight or flight, and nobody's ever thinking clearly after something like this happens. And so I think everyone's instinct at first is like, I got to get the hell out of here. And then maybe later it sinks in, maybe I need to turn myself in or whatever the case may be. But it's, to me, that's just a normal reaction.
The thing is that I eventually was going to turn myself in, but I knew if I didn't turn myself in with a proper lawyer that this would go the way somebody else wanted it to go and not the way it should go.
Mm-hmm.
But I never got the opportunity to get proper representation. And that's one of the reasons why I got found guilty. I've had 3 or 4 different appeals in which all fell on deaf ears, just like my father. But if I could get any, you know, the proper attention that needed to be paid to the actual evidence in the case, there's no reason that anyone would find me guilty.
None.
Of this case.
None. And when I read through the investigation that was done, that was just a royal disaster. The investigators they had working on this, they were there was one guy, he actually claimed at the trial that he has this special ability to know who's lying and who's not, and they can use something like that as evidence, and then didn't the whole thing was just a fiasco.
Then having a lawyer that didn't care
to
do his job at all. You know, my lawyer never tried to question their key witness on his changed story. My lawyer allowed the detectives to vouch for the credibility of him, even though they found him in a lie. My lawyer never filed a discovery demand, which is lawyering 101. And I had a bench trial, so a judge was the finder of guilty and not guilty, and the judge found me guilty of some of facts not in evidence. So the judge basically said he found my story incredible because I claimed to never had touched a gun, which was something I never said.
All calls other than properly placed attorney calls may be monitored and recorded.
I read somewhere that there was like 11 or 12 or 13 times
remaining
during the trial where you had mentioned that you'd touched the gun in some form because you were trying to wrestle the gun away, and the judge just...
Exactly.
The judge didn't listen to this at all, and then when that's brought up later on appeal, he says, oh, yeah, I spoke wrong, so this is what I really meant. And they're not supposed to do that, but they just get away with everything here.
From the time the trial was over, it was 90 days before he rendered his verdict of guilty.
Oh, wow.
Which is very unusual. Yeah. So he had forgot everything about the trial by the time he rendered his verdict of guilty. So that's why he said what he said. And even when it was pointed out later, he then tried to say, well, what I meant was...
A lot of guys, they submit appeals that are just meritless and they get denied, but a lot of guys also have legitimate complaints in their appeal like you did. Witnesses that changed their story completely. Detectives that thought they were human lie detectors and they just didn't have to even really look at the evidence because they had their minds made up. Judges who are using stuff that never happened against you when they're convicting you. And, you know, you talk to these appeals attorneys, and a lot of them will tell you that it seems these days law doesn't really even matter because you'll hear things like, yeah, they did this wrong. That search was illegal. The judge acted improperly, but it probably wouldn't have changed the outcome of the trial. So we'll just leave it as it is. They make all of these laws to protect citizens, you know, from being wrongfully convicted, and yet they don't really follow the laws that are in place. They just say, yeah, that was done illegally, but, oh, it's probably okay. We'll just ignore what happened. And consequently, that's why in America we have the highest rate of wrongful convictions anywhere in the world. Some estimates as high as 10% are wrongfully convicted. So it's sad that you give them everything, just like I'm sure your dad did as well, and they just kind of look the other way.
Exactly. And truth be told, my father had really given up because he had developed later years early onset dementia. So he got an issue with dementia. He didn't really get to enjoy his last little time. One of his main frustrations was that he couldn't help me.
Yeah.
Because know, he didn't have the capability to do what needed to be done to help me get legal representation.
Oh, that's got to be so awful that he lived through that, and then he has to watch his son go through the same thing. No amount of money. I mean, I'm glad somebody had to pay $2 million, but still that, you know, what amount of money is going to make up for 43 years, right?
Yeah.
I just hope that people are listening to this and realize when a lot of people make judgments when someone says, I'm innocent, I didn't do it, and they say, oh, yeah, everybody says that. But there really are thousands and thousands of people that are in this type of situation, just like you're in. All the evidence points to the fact that you didn't do what you were convicted of doing. And I hope somebody hears this and actually cares enough to look into it further. If they don't let you out on an appeal, how much longer will you have to be there until you get released?
Another 16 years.
I mean, we're always here to help however we can. Clifford Walker, 198-834.
If anybody listening to this, the sound of my voice and your voice is motivated to help me with my story, you know, in any way, being here with words of encouragement or even financially, they can send money to me in three different ways. They can use a number, and it's 866-345-1884. Or they can go to accesscorrections.com, and that's accesscorrections.com. Or they can go to cashpaytoday.com and use my name and inmate number to help me raise the money to get a lawyer.
Yeah, get a lawyer that actually cares enough to do the work.
I would have to get an out-of-state lawyer because any lawyer in the state is so afraid of burning bridges in the system that they won't fight the way they're supposed to fight.
Yeah, it's crazy. There's so many lawyers that they're afraid of the prosecutors. They're afraid to hurt the judges' feelings, and I've seen that in so many states, but it sounds like yours is one of the worst. So you got to get a guy like, you know, like a bulldog that's actually going to fight and could care less if he offends anybody.
That's what you need.
We're going to spread the word on here. We're going to promote you as many ways as we can and get as many people as possible hearing your story. I mean, the facts are all out there, so they can go look this stuff up and they see. I mean, everything you've told me today is just the truth, and it's out there if people want to look into it more.
I'm perfectly willing to. I have my own paperwork that's not that is more conclusive to what the facts and what went on. So I'm an open book about sharing that paperwork too.
Thank you again for talking with us today.
All right, Steve, I want to thank you for the platform. I've been waiting almost 20 years to be able to have some type of support to continue this fight. I'm fighting. I just truly appreciate you, man. You're one of the best dudes I've come across in during this time. So thank you.
It's lockdown time for Big Steve, but he'll be back Monday with another edition of the PenPals.Buzz podcast. To be a guest on our show, email podcast@PenPals.Buzz or call 888-2-PENPAL. PenPals.Buzz is a division of Snaptura Inmate Services.